Welcome to In Context, WPKN's live public affairs call-in program. This is Ken McDermott Rowe, and I'm here with my fellow host, Gus Cantavero.
Good evening.
Today we're going to talk about vaccines. Are Americans, especially our children, getting too many vaccines, and what are the consequences? We'll be opening the phone lines in a few minutes for your calls, but first, we're going to get some perspective on vaccines from our guest, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. Dr. Tenpenny is one of the nation's most knowledgeable physicians on the impact of vaccines on health. She's the author of numerous articles and books on vaccines and has produced several DVDs as well. Her books include Saying No to Vaccines, and her DVDs include Flu and Flu Vaccines, What's Coming Through That Needle. Her website is drtenpenny.com. That's drtenpenny.com. Dr. Tenpenny, thanks very much for joining us on In Context today.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me.
We're glad to have you.
How many vaccines does a typical American child receive these days?
Currently, if they get all vaccines that are recommended on the schedule, they get more than 40 doses of 16 different vaccines by the time they start kindergarten.
Do you feel that all these vaccines are necessary?
No, I don't.
But in your film, What the CDC Doesn't Want You to Know About Vaccines, you specify there's a number of antibodies that are included into combination shots, right? How many? What's the number that you say they're actually getting? The number of vaccines, isn't it quite higher?
No. Well, actually, what they're getting is let me back up a second.
Okay.
What you said was, were there a combination of antibodies and vaccines? And I think that what you meant was a number of antigens in the vaccines.
Yes, I'm only a layman here.
No, that's okay. We just want to clarify that for your listeners.
Yeah, go ahead and please clarify whenever you need to.
Okay, it's fine. And so, yes, in combination vaccines, they actually get much more than that. In fact, they get 113 different vaccine antigens by the time they enter kindergarten. And by the time that you go through middle school and you get the vaccines that are recommended for junior high and you get boosters, that children could literally have 156 different vaccine antigens injected by the time they are in middle school.
That's incredible.
By way of a comparison,
let me just define quickly what an antigen means.
Okay.
Because I think that's kind of a medical term, and not everybody may know what that means. For example, if you hear the vaccine MMR, measles, mumps, and rubella, mm-hmm. So that's three different vaccine antigens, one for measles, one for mumps, and one for rubella, all combined into a single shot.
Okay.
So that one single shot, you are getting three different vaccine antigens.
Mm.
In the vaccine that they call Prevnar, which is for strep, pneumococcal strep, which is a type of bacteria, the new Prevnar vaccines have 13 different types of antigens. So you get injected with different antigens that cause different types of antibodies to 13 different strains of strep in that one shot. So it's like getting one shot, but you could be getting 13 separate antigens, which were really like 13 different vaccines combined into one shot.
And that's leaving a whole lot of wild cards on the table, not knowing what your body's going to react to or find to be offensive to your personal genetic makeup, right?
Well, absolutely. And nobody really knows for sure how many previous exposures that people have had. And that there are in addition to those vaccine antigens that we talked about that come into the individual vaccines, the more common ones are DPT, diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis,
mm-hmm.
MMR, measles, mumps, and rubella. Then there's the list goes on from there. There are over 63 different types of chemicals that are in the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them, if you look them up in the chemistry MSDS, which is at the MSDS sheets, which are the sheets that tell you about the toxicities for those chemicals, many of them are very, very toxic, even when they are exposed through the skin or inhaled or perhaps ingested, like by taking in through your mouth. So how much more toxic are they if they are injected directly into your body and through your skin? So if you've gotten every dose of every vaccine, you've gotten about 113 doses of vaccine antigens and about 63 doses of chemicals. Some of them are milligram amounts, so they're like almost a teaspoon amount of chemicals that are in each one of those shots.
Are you talking about things like mercury and aluminum?
Well, those are two separate issues, but yes, those are two things that are potentially in the shots. The mercury actually has been taken out of most of the vaccines. They are still a lot of mercury involved in the flu shots and the annual seasonal flu shots that we get every year that we now start giving children as of 6 months of age. The multi-dose flu shots are still have a lot of mercury in them. There are many vaccines that have a large amount of aluminum in them.
Okay.
I'm talking about different types of chemicals, of things like sodium borate and calcium chloride and ammonium borate and different types of antibiotics and something called Triton X100, which is a detergent, and the list just goes on from
so
there.
So you really don't know if there's a bad reaction, whether it's from the antigen or some one of these other chemicals that's been put in with the shot.
That's correct, because we've really only looked at vaccines in terms of side effects from a couple of different perspectives. We look at a shot given individually, and we usually monitor those sites for infection or for or types of side effects for maybe 14 to 21 days. And we in medicine and many in immunology know that it takes much longer than that to develop a potential side effect.
Mm-hmm.
There have really not been any studies that have looked at really the chemical contaminants and the different parts of the vaccine and whether or not they are the parts that are actually causing a lot of the problems. There's no studies based on that.
And I just rewatched one of your movies the other night, What the CDC Doesn't Want You to Know About Vaccines, and that's already kind of old. It's from 2003, but the information in there is evergreen. It's continually relevant and informative. And one of the important things that you discuss in that film is the fact that the safety studies don't compare the vaccines against a placebo, but instead they compare against other previous vaccines with a known safety pattern.
That's correct. Let me just draw that out a little bit, because that really is one of the cornerstone issues about vaccine safety, for which there isn't any. When you look at all of medicine, the gold standard for safety is the double-blind placebo-controlled clinical trial. And what that means is that you've got two populations of people that are involved in the experiment, basically, in the study. And you give group A a vaccine or the drug, and you give group B something that's a placebo. And by definition, a placebo is something that causes no reaction, is considered to be inert.
Mm-hmm.
That is the gold standard for all of research of medicine, to see whether or not group A that actually got the substance, what kind of side effects and reactions that they have compared to group B that doesn't have any reactions, and the people in the group really don't know if they are really in group A or group B. So that's the double-blinded part. So what ends up happening then is when you're doing a new vaccine, which most of the time they are the new combination vaccines, and so you give group A a combination vaccine of, let's say, it's Hib and hepatitis B together. So you combine those into one shot, or something like Pediarix, which is DPT, hepatitis B, and polio, all in one shot. And you give group A that shot. Now, to know whether or not that really has any side effects, you should give group B a shot of sterile water or saline or something that really causes no problems at all, and compare how many reactions there are. But instead, what happens in the clinical trials is that group A gets that combination shot, and group B gets five different shots of each one of those vaccines given individually. And they call that the placebo. And then they look at the outcomes in terms of side effects, and they say, well, group A that got all of those vaccines given in one shot has the same amount of side effects as the people that were given the placebo, even though the placebo was the exact same shot, only given in five different injections at the same time instead of one.
Therefore, nothing happened.
Therefore, if group A had seven different side effects and group B had seven different side effects, they would say, well, it's as safe as placebo.
Wow.
And you also mentioned that when there are harmful side effects, that often the CDC will ascribe them to some weakness in the patient and the child.
There's two parts about that in terms of if there are side effects. Number one is that the CDC and the American Academy of Pediatrics and many of the other pro-vaccine organizations will simply say, well, it must have been something wrong with that child. They must have had something defective, like perhaps they had this new thing called a mitochondrial disorder. Mm-hmm. And a mitochondria is a little small organelle that lives inside of the cells of our body, and that is the actual little tiny organelle that generates the ATP in our body. And the ATP is what drives our energy systems. So now they're saying that people like Hannah Poehling, which was in the news a few months ago, maybe a year and a half ago now, about the first child that was publicly given a huge award for vaccine injury through the injury compensation program. They said, well, she had this injury because she had this mitochondrial disorder. So now it's blaming the defective child. Something was wrong with the child that they absolutely could not tolerate the assault of all these vaccines, all the vaccine antigens, and all the chemicals. So something was wrong that made the child break. And that doesn't happen very often. And so we'll say that that happens, you know, one in a million times. But nobody really knows for sure, because many of the injuries, it takes a very long time for these side effects and complications inside of the immune system to develop. And if it's happened more than a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, then the industry says, well, there was something else that caused it. It had nothing to do with the vaccine.
They're listening to In Context on WPKN, and we're talking with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny about vaccines and their effects on the patients. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a call at 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756 to join our conversation on In Context with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny on vaccines.
Dr. Tenpenny, I have pages of notes here, and I've just been really anxious to talk about this, but I have one follow-up question with what you just said, and then I want to shift gears. Hasn't it also been shown that nurses have given shots, unbeknownst to them, not necessarily that they're negligent or anything like that, but not shaking up the vials properly and giving a double dose of the chemicals that are in the vials because they've settled to the bottom, you know? So would they say, you know, you're only getting a small dose of these chemicals, but, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that your particular dosage has been mixed correctly or dosed out properly for your age and weight.
That's true. That's absolutely true. And they've known that sometimes, particularly in the multi-dose flu vials, mm-hmm. that it's supposed to have 25 micrograms per dose if it's evenly distributed across all 10 doses that come out of that vial.
Mm-hmm.
But you just think about that, just logically, that can't happen, and that some of the people are going to get a larger concentration than others.
Mm-hmm.
And if that particular vial, let's say you've got 3 doses that have pulled out of it, and then it sat to the bottom, and you didn't shake it really well, now you have a much larger concentration when you get to the end of the vial just by the pure mechanics of it
than you would
have by if there was a pure dispersion across all 10 of those dosages.
Right, so you have a 6-month-old baby, you know, weighing just a few pounds. And then you have, you know, an adult who's 200 and something pounds, like myself. You know, the amount of the dosage is just going to be completely off. The amount of chemicals, harmful chemicals, going into this little infant.
Well, the other part of that is that, you know, we give the same doses of the vaccines to a 10-pound baby
mm-hmm.
that we give to a 150-pound adult.
Right.
And there is nothing in pediatrics, nothing. Every other medication that's ever given to a child is all calculated based on body weight. If you give them amoxicillin or you give them Tylenol, you give them so many milligrams per pound.
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen in the vaccine industry. And in fact, the hepatitis B vaccine that is actually given at birth, if a baby's born prematurely, you know, a full-term infant is born at around 40 weeks, and let's say that an infant is born 10 weeks early, at 30 weeks, and is struggling to live, they still give those vaccines on schedule as though that child was born full term.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's criminal. I think there's absolutely no reason to give those vaccines to those neonatal babies that are struggling for their life in the intensive care unit. And absolutely, they're in this sterile environment. Everybody's got gowns and gloves and all of these things. Plus, they're not giving it at a metered dose. They're giving a preemie at 3 pounds the same dose of vaccine that they would give a 10-pound baby or a hepatitis B vaccine that they would give to a 150-pound adult.
Right.
If you'd like to have a question if you have a question for Dr. Sherry Tenpenny on vaccines, give us a ring at 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756.
Now, I'm sorry to filibuster here, Ken, but I just have one more important question I want to get to, and then I'll shut up for a minute. I just want to ask you quickly your opinion on the research of Dr. Andrew Wakefield, who's been looking into the connection between MMR and Crohn's disease. He claims that the MMR vaccine actually destroys your natural gut bacteria and has given rise to the major increase in cases for for Crohn's disease and other other gut-related diseases?
Well, I was hoping that that would come up a little bit later in the discussion.
Okay, sorry.
Quite controversial, and I don't want to turn your listeners off to all, because so many people are already so polarized on that issue.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so polarized because they are uninformed. All they've heard is Anderson Cooper, 360,
right.
Take apart, you know, Andy Wakefield, or they've heard, you know, some other media outlet where they had thousands of people telling the American public wrong information, and everybody swallowed it hook, line, and sinker.
Right.
Even the journalists, the people of the Association of Healthcare Journalism, people who write on this topic, never bothered to ask the follow-up questions. They just assumed that what they said about that Dr. Wakefield's information was fraudulent, that it had never been replicated, and that because of him, that we have all of these parents who are refusing vaccination. All of those things are incorrect. His studies have been replicated. It was not proven to be fraudulent. There is a much larger context to the story that nothing in the mainstream media bothered to replicate or to even ask the questions.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's really looked at Dr. Wakefield's research, and the paper that they made such a big deal about retracting was a paper from 1998 that the conclusion of the study said, isn't this interesting that perhaps these children who have gotten the MMR vaccine are now having bowel disturbances, and it appears as though they have vaccine-strain measles in their gut. This is a very interesting finding that deserves further investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Never once did he say MMR causes autism. Never once did he say, don't get the MMR. In fact, he has always been a fairly big advocate of splitting up the MMR vaccine and giving measles, mumps, and rubella as individual shots.
Right.
Because his contention was that perhaps, not concluded, but perhaps what was causing the largest amount of problems in the guts of these children was giving three live virus vaccines simultaneously at the same time. Researchers and journalists should be ashamed of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They never once asked the follow-up questions, and they assumed that because they heard it on the 6 o'clock news, that was the end of the story, period, and discussion. I have a book sitting on my desk right now that I've been asked to review. It's on smallpox, and the letter that came from the editor actually said, at the very end of the letter, you know, now we've got all of this hysteria about vaccination because of the fraudulent research of Dr. Andrew Wakefield. My response to that is if that is the only toehold that they have in the entire industry, is to say it's because of Dr. Wakefield and his research, that's the reason of all of this noise and commotion, then they've got their backs up against the wall.
Well, let's, Dr. Tanpenny, let's talk about some of the side effects that you've observed. What are the most serious side effects, and what vaccines are they associated with?
The most serious side effect would be death.
Okay.
And you mentioned that in connection with one of your articles on the DPT.
Many of the vaccines have death, seizure disorder, anaphylactic shock, multiple types of neuropathies. The hepatitis B vaccine has a very long list of confirmed neurological disorders that have come in that have been associated with the hepatitis B vaccine, both in children and in adults. You know, a lot of the focus on vaccine problems, by definition and maybe by default, gets focused on children because they get so many of these vaccines at such an early age, and we're seeing
so close together and seeing
such a large number of kids. We've never had a population of children that were this sick.
Mm-hmm.
But there are thousands and thousands of vaccine-injured adults out there, too, from hepatitis B, from flu shots, from hepatitis A. Many, many of our members in the military that are just pincushions for all of these vaccines and vaccine experiments and studies.
Right.
We have thousands of vaccine-injured adults, too.
If you'd like to ask a question for Dr. Sherry Tanpenny, give us a call at 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756. The program's called In Context on WPKN 89.5 FM. And you have done quite a bit of research on the flu shot. What is your feeling about the effectiveness of, or what is it? What does the data show as to the effectiveness of the flu shot for babies and for adults?
You know, I'd like to answer that, but before I do that, I'd like to maybe give some of my comments a little bit more context for your listeners.
Sure.
In the fact that, you know, I'm a board-certified physician. I was the director of an emergency department in Ohio. I'm calling you right now from Cleveland, Ohio. I was the director of an emergency department for 12 years. I run my own business since 1996, treating patients that have come from 39 states and 11 foreign countries to our clinic to get well and off their drugs. We focus on allergy elimination, on women's health, breast thermography, and a whole host of ways that we eliminate patients' pain. So I've been doing healthcare and am in the practice of medicine, full-time practice of medicine, since 1985. I got interested in the vaccine issue in September of 2000 when I attended the National Vaccine Information Center meeting in Washington, D.C. in September of 2000. I walked away from that meeting saying, oh, my gosh, who would have ever thought there was all these problems with vaccines? I personally come from three generations of chiropractors in my family. I was never vaccinated as a child. None of my cousins were ever vaccinated as children. We had measles, mumps, rubella, chickenpox, and pertussis, and the other normal childhood vaccine or childhood illnesses. So when I came home from that meeting, I started researching and I started reading the CDC documents, peer-reviewed journal literature from the Pediatric Infectious Disease Journal and the New England Journal of Medicine, and on and on and on. And now today, I've put in well over 12,000 hours of personal research into this topic. So I just want your listeners to know that I'm a physician in the full-time practice of medicine. This is not stuff that comes from conspiratology.com or stuff that comes off of some obscure website somewhere. Mm-hmm. This is something that is a studied opinion that took me a while to become this strong about my opinion. And now that I've seen what I've seen in terms of the travesty of vaccine injury, I'm unwavering in my opinions.
And that's exactly why we wanted to have you on, because you have such a studied opinion.
What would you advise people as far as the flu shot? Is it effective for the infants or for elderly?
The flu shot is a I can't believe that the U.S. government is the number one purveyor, a purchaser of flu shots on a worldwide basis. Mm-hmm. Because the research has shown unequivocally over the years that there are three main age groups of which we give flu shots. We give children flu shots starting at 6 months of age and every year for the rest of their life. That's the pediatric population. We have middle-aged adults ostensibly to keep them from getting sick, and the geriatric, over 60 age population, ostensibly from keeping them from getting sick and giving it to their grandchildren. In all three of those populations, they have shown by a complete review of every published study ever done about flu shots that in pediatrics and in middle-aged adults and in senior citizens, that getting a flu shot is no more effective in keeping you from getting the flu than from taking a sugar pill.
Okay.
So in any population, it doesn't work.
Anecdotally, I mean, I every place I go, I see CVS and Walgreens with the posters outside. Get your flu shot for someone you love. You know,
people think that getting a flu shot is like getting a shot of vitamin B12. They think it's good for you. It's like getting a vitamin. Mm-hmm. It's completely harmless. If you don't get it, you're probably going to get sick. And the other truth about the flu shot is each year there are three viruses in the flu shot. They do two strains of influenza A and a strain of influenza B. Every year you get jabbed with this thing. And if it works at all, then you need to develop an antibody to influenza that's out there in the general population to keep you from getting sick. Well, over the last 13 years of all the swabs, every year there are swabs, you know, people get sick with the flu, they go to the doctor, there are certain places where they swab your nose and swab your throat, and they send that little sample to the CDC in Atlanta to test to see, are your symptoms actually really being caused by influenza? Or are you having the symptoms from something else? Because there are a lot of other bugs that can give you symptoms of influenza. Over the last 14 years, the total number of swabs, and they have millions of hundreds of thousands of swabs per year, only 13% of those swabs had influenza in them, meaning that out of every 100 people that had symptoms of the flu, only 13 of them had illness caused by influenza.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that you can get the flu shot and you can still get the flu. That means that 87 people out of 100 are going to have the flu, and the flu shot wouldn't have worked for them anyways.
We just have a few minutes left here, Dr. Tenpenny, but a couple other vaccines I wanted you to comment on. Gardasil, what is that, and would you recommend that?
Gardasil is for, supposedly it's the first anti-cancer vaccine to keep little girls and now little boys from getting infected from a virus called, from an HPV virus, a human papillomavirus. There, it is ostensibly because those cancers have been associated with cervical cancer, and note mm-hmm. that I didn't say cause cervical cancer. They've been associated with it.
Right.
We know that there are over 100 strains of HPV out in circulation. We know that there are at least 8 that have been associated with cervical cancer. The shot only contains 2 of those strains. The other 2 strains are for genital warts. We know that polysorbate 80 and a combination of boron that's in those shots have caused infertility in female mice and causes testicular atrophy in little boy mice. My concern is that many of these girls down the road, when they get full course of the 3 shots of the Gardasil vaccine, they're going to end up, when they get into their 20s, having issues with infertility. They're also going to have a false sense of security, thinking that this shot is going to keep them from getting cervical cancer, even though there are many other types of strains that can cause it. And because of that shot, they're going to stop getting their Pap's test, which is the worst possible thing they can do.
If my memory serves correctly, hasn't Gardasil been banned in a couple countries in Europe? Like, didn't Germany find that there was a couple girls who died in the trials or something like that?
There have been I don't know about being banned in the UK. I know that there's a second type of shot called Cervix that's been used in the UK that has even more side effects than what we've seen here in this mm-hmm. country. We know for sure right now, today, that there are at least 87 young, vibrant young women, young girls, who have died or have become, and there are many more that have become permanently disabled from the Gardasil vaccine. 87 okay. deaths and many more confirmed injuries.
Now, speaking of cancer, I also want to mention, because I found this to be completely just mind-blowing, but the cultures that a lot of the vaccines are created in, for example, the polio vaccine is used African green monkey cultures, cell cultures, which a lot of them contain the SV40 virus, which is a cancer-causing virus. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, there are these vaccines. You know, I think that we have this perception, we in the general public have this perception that if you get a vaccine, if you get a shot, the only thing that's in that shot is a little dead virus, maybe a little bit of bacteria, and some sterile water. I mean, my gosh, how can that be harmful? And if you inject that in, you get an antibody, it may keep you from getting sick.
Mm-hmm.
What we're not aware of is that the other things that are in those vaccines. Like, for example, you mentioned the polio vaccine made from the African green monkey kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
So there are kidney viruses in there. There's little bits of monkey kidney tissue in there. There are some of the flu shots that are made from eggs. And the egg, there's little particles of eggs in there, and that's why people who are allergic to flu shots are advised not to get, I'm sorry, are allergic to eggs are advised not to get flu shots. There's parts of egg in there. There's stray avian viruses in there that have been associated with cancer. There's several of the other shots that are made from bovine serum, which is cow serum, and they have stray cow viruses in there that have been associated with cancer. These are filthy things we're injecting into our bodies. Filthy.
Yeah.
And how can we possibly put this happy umbrella of injecting this stuff in? It's going to somehow keep us healthy.
What about the possible Alzheimer's connection to vaccines?
You know, that's been sort of a thing that's floated around for quite a while. I mean, I saw that early on. I think I even talked about it in one of my DVDs, is that there was a kind of an unconfirmed association that if you've had 10 or more flu shots, that it increases your risk of developing Alzheimer's as you get older. I can theoretically say that there's probably some truth to that because of what's in the flu shots and because the flu shots have had so much mercury involved with them, but I've not been able to see actually published reports to confirm that.
Well, all right, so we haven't been able to confirm that, but we do know that there's a large amount of aluminum and mercury,
exactly.
And both of those will collect in a brain tissue.
Exactly.
Which, you put two and two together, and that could lead to something like Alzheimer's.
Right, right. But at this point, I would say that's a logical conclusion, but not a proven assumption.
Okay.
I'm afraid we're running out of time, so this will be our last question.
Yeah, I just have one last question. you know, you've already mentioned all the dangers of the chemicals, the preservatives, introducing foreign RNA and DNA into our bodies, the way these things are created, but they're still promoted as if they are going to save the world.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Now, my logical next question is, how can doctors who are educated, you know, the upper crust of society, suffer?
They're underinformed.
They're suffering from a severe cognitive dissonance. They're keeping two completely contrary thoughts in their head. They're dangerous. The drug companies admit that they don't work, but yet again, I have to give it to your 6-month-old baby.
Yes, cognitive dissonance is probably a really good way to explain that. I would make a just, you know, I'm not much of a betting person.
Okay.
I'm not much of a gambler, but I would make a fairly sizable bet that most of the pediatricians have never even gone so far as to read package inserts to know what the ingredients are. And that's one of the arguments that, you know, one of the things I tell young parents when they go and confront their pediatrician. They say, have you read the package insert? Can you name for me 3 ingredients, you know, sort of stacking the deck? You know it as a parent before you go in the door.
Yeah.
What are the three? Can you name at least 3 ingredients that are in the package insert? And if the doctor can't do it, you should say to that doctor, if you don't even know what's in the shot, how can you possibly advocate putting this into my child?
Well, that's disappointing.
I think that's a very good note to leave the conversation on with. I'm afraid we're out of time, but Dr. Penny, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Tenpenny.
Conversation.
You're welcome. Anytime.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to In Context, WPKN's live call-in show with hosts Ken McDermott Rowe and Gus Cantavera, and we've been speaking about vaccines with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, author of Saying a No to Vaccines. Dr. Tenpenny's website is drtenpenny.com. This program will be archived at our website, incontextreport.com, where you can read our blog, watch our videos, make comments, and sign up for announcements and podcasts. In Context is produced by MDR Productions and is broadcast on the first Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the first Sunday of the month at 10 p.m. Please join us this Sunday, June 5th at 10 p.m. when we'll discuss China's challenge to the U.S. and Pakistan and the efforts of Texans to ban the TSA's full body searches. Thanks for listening. Thanks also to Chris Teske for engineering. And please stay tuned for John Corvino, who's going to be sitting in for Chris in the next show.
See you, everybody.
Bye-bye.
The only way that a human being can get a bird flu or a swine flu is if it is injected in them.
So how did we get swine flu then?
It's been made in a factory and injected.
Say no to the vaccine.
Needle on the record, put the needle on the record, put the needle on the record when the drum beats go like
this. I put the needle to the record because the needle is defective and the needle breaks the record when the needle is the method for prevention of the fever, bringing death to the receiver. There's no effort in believing that the method feeds the fever. See the leader. Diseases are invented in the lab. One believes it or reading recent mentions of the jab. Centered in a grand scab of corruption and lies, injecting views of doom from newsroom into the public eye. But now the floor has risen on a cause of autism. Doctors show research and scores applaud with them. It's mercury and vaccines. Often there's more given. Peace ignored and forbidden, cause profit is war driven. A score billion on vaccines alone, and the government don't care. They're always taxing the clones, and the CDC is right behind this rolling cart. Part involved from the start in this evolving art. A big pharma, big deception, Obama, big karma. Enter White, Roach, Bayer, and Baxter Healthcare. All assorted history with stacks of health scares. You got HIV and bird flu mixed up in the shops. I've been connecting the dots between the money that swaps. Conspiracy? Yeah, I sense a couple of plots.
If you never want to get the swine flu, don't go get the swine flu vaccine.
There is one little word that can save your health.
Just say no. Say no to the vaccine.
And if the doctor says, then make him take it himself. Just say no. Say no to the vaccine.
There is one little word that could save your health.
Just say no. Say no to the vaccine.
And if Obama says, then make him take it himself. Just say no.
say no to the vaccine.
I don't need your prescription, I ain't got no affliction. Corporate pharmaceuticals dealing with politicians. Put them on prescription, that should be our own decision. Whether we want spending on vaccines or health and education. Soon they enlist the general populace. They're adding to the list pharmaceutical benefits. Yo, Alexa Finline, Glasgow Smith Klein, Coffin, Nitrin, Fine, still ain't seen your disease, Matt, how coffin, better swine. Depopulation linked with holding vaccines. Rather let a product lapse and save some human beings. Now death is a can in the beans, so they won't hear, but soon we running on the machine. Yo, another flu, yo, that ain't our biggest threat. What about an aging population with no safety net? So we continue to believe everything we read. There just ain't no taste in their newsfeed.
Weapons of trial and error, we're smiling in terror at the doctor and nurse. Take a hold of yourself and control of your health and say no.
Why don't you go first?
But there's one little word that can save your health. Just say no. Say no to the vaccine.
The doctor says he will make him take it himself.
Say no, no, no. Say no to the vaccine.
There's one little word that can save your health. Just say no. Say no to the vaccine. If Obama says he will make him take it himself. Just say no.
Say no to the vaccine.
Don't get any injections. You never know what's in them. They're all poison.
Put the needle on the record.
And there's no record that they ever prevent anything.